2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations. From Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
For this episode of Trailer Talk, I'm so excited to welcome
Laurie Sejan, longtime Sullivan County resident and acknowledged political junkie.
And Nina.
Hi, I'm Nina Burley, and I'm a journalist and an author.
Welcome to the kitchen table of Trailer Talk. It's just after the debate, and we're going to have a conversation as we're leading up to the general election.
Local analysis of the presidential race on Trailer Talk, Monday night at 7:30 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Tyler Hill, Pennsylvania resident Kiki Reginato. Kiki first came to my attention at a Yarn Slingers event in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. Her story was so hilarious and her delivery completely deadpan. I just couldn't stop laughing. She has lots of real-life material to draw from, starting with her father, a sculptor who has lived in Soho Kiki's entire life, and her mother, also a sculptor, who lived in Harlem while Kiki was growing up as the child of these divorced parents. She'll talk about that and tell us about meeting Presidents Obama and Biden and how she and her husband sold their first house, which was a total revelation to this old baby boomer. Kiki's also going to be reading one of her stories, so please enjoy my conversation with Kiki Reginato. Welcome to Catskill Character, Kiki.
Hi, Donna.
Let's start with your living arrangements from the age of five, which was the result, as I just said, of your parents' divorce.
Yeah, so I grew up half the time in Soho and half the time in Harlem. My dad lives in like one of those kind of stereotypical Soho lofts that you can't believe exists. He has like a whole floor. And my mom lives in this very beautiful, classic Harlem townhouse. So yeah, they couldn't have been aesthetically more different. My dad's house was like white and modern, and my mom's house was like eclectic and historical. So yeah, they were kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum.
And did that hold true for their parenting approaches?
Yeah, I think that, you know, my mom was very classic mom, you know, like, did you do your homework? Where are you? And my dad, he kind of viewed us as these like two small roommates that he had who also had the same nose as him.
When did the dichotomy between these two households begin to dawn on you? And what, if anything, was the result of that?
I think it probably dawned on me when I started explaining it to people, you know, probably when I went off to college, honestly, because I grew up in New York City. So in New York City, everyone's parents are weird. I grew up in like Soho and Harlem, and, you know, that wasn't weird to anybody. But when I got to college, I had to explain myself for the first time ever. And I was like, oh, this actually is a very strange way of growing up.
Do you have any kind of examples that come to mind, or not, of the differences between the way they would approach the same thing that was going on with you?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking of? What about dating?
Dating. Oh my God. Well, I don't think either of them particularly cared. they were like, all right, do whatever you want. So I don't, yeah, I, there were growing up, I didn't have any rules. Like there were no rules in either of their houses. I could kind of do whatever I wanted. So
they did have the commonality in that they were both artists.
Yes.
So yeah. Okay. That I understand that. You also mentioned, I think that you have a younger brother. Is he an artist as well?
Yes. He is also an artist. He is the coolest person I know. Like if I ever need to meet a cool person and I need to impress them, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe you know my brother. And inevitably they do know my brother. He is a filmmaker / artist / sometimes model. So yeah, I think so he's like classically cool in every sense of the word. We are close, but he's always, you know, he's like one of those people who is always like, oh, I'm about to go to LA, or oh, I'm like shooting a film in Pittsburgh or something like that.
Does he ever take you on set with him when he's doing this?
No, he never has. But now that you mention that, I should probably figure out a way to abuse my connections more.
Absolutely. Now, what about you? How do you see yourself fitting into the family mold?
I am without a doubt the black sheep of the family. Not that in the sense that I'm shunned, but in the sense that I come from this extremely artistic family, visually artistic family, and I have a normal person job. So I think I'm like, my parents are like, oh, I'm glad that you have a job, but this is so different than what I think they expected from me and just what my family does.
Well, you did tell me that when you got out of college, you wanted a quote unquote normal person job.
Oh, yeah. And
what you're describing to me, you sound like you've got a little bit of Alex Keaton from the show Family Ties in you. Do you know who that is?
No.
Okay, so that was Michael J. Fox's show on TV, and he played this Republican son of these hippie parents. Mm-hmm. So they were always kind of like incredulous. They would look at him like they just, where did you come from? And not that your parents are incredulous about you, but you do sort of fit into that scheme. But I don't know, Kiki, from where I sit, you're a very skilled writer. So you actually are an artist. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about your day job. How did you describe it to me?
Yeah, so my title is the VP of Operations and Strategy for Vox Media New York Magazine. And essentially what that means is I do math, money, and computers. I do product and data for a big media company.
Wow, that really is different than your family.
Yeah, I spend my entire day in like Excel and SQL and Looker dashboards and building PowerPoint presentations. So yeah.
But you like it, right?
I do really like it.
That's fantastic. So your normal person job is working out for you, and that's good.
Yeah.
Now, the first normal person job that you got after college was as a field organizer for the Obama campaign in Columbus, Ohio, and you got to meet the then Senator Obama. So I'd like you to talk about what a field organizer is, and then tell us about how you met Senator Obama.
Yeah, so a field organizer is basically like a glorified telemarketer / like camp counselor. So what you're doing is you're just organizing volunteers and you're like making lots of like signs with glitter on them. And, you know, yeah, your day to day is you're in an office and you are corralling volunteers. And you do door knocking, you make phone calls, you organize volunteers to make phone calls. So I was in Columbus, Ohio, which was like the epicenter of the epicenter of the election. So Biden would be there practically like every other week at one point, like every day Biden was like showing up at our office, and we had these like Nerf guns and he would like play with the kids in the yard, chasing them around with like water guns and Nerf guns, because he just became like such a staple of our everyday. And one time he really roasted my boss, which I found hysterical. So he will always have a special place in my heart. But so I had this volunteer named Winifred, and Winifred came into the office, you know, to volunteer. And she comes up to me and, you know, she's like, "What's your name?" And I'm like, "Kiki." And Winifred's Black. And she turns to me and she's like, "Kiki, your name is Kiki? I've never met a white Kiki in my entire life." She's like, "What?" And she goes out to her husband, gets him from the car, brings him in and is like, "Look, this is the white Kiki I was talking about." And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. I am from Harlem, but like, yes, I am the white Kiki, which is a great thing about my name, because I feel like every culture claims the name Kiki, like WASPs claim Kiki and like Greek people claim Kiki and Japanese people claim Kiki. So anyway, Winifred, every single time she came to the office, she would just like bring a new friend or relation. And she'd be like, "This is the white Kiki I've been telling you about." Then every single time Winifred would bring someone into the office, like a friend or, you know, like her relations, she would introduce me as, "This is the white Kiki I've been telling you about." So it is the night of the election and Obama is in Ohio and he's in Columbus and we are going to meet him, my pod of other organizers and all of our volunteers. And one of those volunteers is Winifred. So we're like in line and Obama's like in our office, like the office we set up with all of our like glitter and stationery and crafts and stuff. And he's, you know, shaking everybody's hand and he shakes Winifred's hand and it's very surreal and there's Secret Service everywhere. And he gets, you know, he's introducing himself to everyone and he comes up to me and he shakes my hand and he says, "What's your name?" And I say, "Kiki." And he looks at me and he's like, "Really?" And Winifred just starts dying laughing. Like she is like, "Oh my God." So, and Obama's like, he is not in on the joke, but everyone is laughing. And he's like, "I'm hilarious. Like I'm killing it." Like he just, I just said the funniest thing. So yeah, that is like my one charming story that I have.
I love it. So you and your husband moved up here from the city. Mm-hmm. But the Catskills certainly weren't new to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually grew up coming up here with my best friend, Callison, her family, Cass Collins, former guest of this show. Yes. I came up here with them when I was a kid, and they had what was like almost like a hippie commune, but like not organized enough to be a commune. It was like more, it was called Bungalow Colony. So it was like 10 families and everybody had a bungalow and we would come up here during the summer. So I have been coming up to the Catskills since I was a little kid.
Fantastic. And you and Ethan had a house in Roscoe. Yeah. Which you sold in a very interesting way. At least it was interesting to me, this old baby boomer. How did you sell that house?
Yeah, so we, you know, in 2018, 2017, I can't remember. It's 2017, I think. We bought what was essentially a hunting cabin in Roscoe, a hunting and fishing cabin. And it was Christmas tree colors. It was red and green everywhere. And the inside, it looked like the 70s had died. It was like aggressively plaid. and we, you know, ripped everything out. My husband is a contractor. So, you know, we ripped everything out. We, you know, put in new floors. We painted the outside of the house. And then once the pandemic happened, we were like, all right, we're moving out of the city for real. And we moved up to the cabin. And then we realized we cannot live full time at this cabin because it was only really a 3-season house. So we decided to sell it during the pandemic. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to put it on Instagram and say, we're going to sell the house. So we just put it on Instagram. And then within like an hour, we had so many offers on the house, like so many offers, we didn't even know what to do with it. So we ended up selling it to like a friend of a friend who reached out to us via Instagram.
Oh my God. Fantastic. That was a really crazy time if you were selling a house, but now you did sell that house and you live in Tyler Hill, Pennsylvania, which is truly one of the most beautiful parts of Wayne County, and you're able to work from home. And I have to confess, Kiki, I went online and I looked at some of your Insta videos, including a couple of you working on the house. You were sanding stairs, you made a headboard. I was so impressed. So you said Ethan is a contractor. Did he teach you to do that kind of stuff, or did you learn it from your parents?
Yeah, I think I started out pretty handy. Like I came into the relationship handy, because I feel like though my dad is an artist, he has kind of like the soul of a plumber. You know, like always, like if you move into a building in like the 60s and there was no real landlord to help you, you just kind of learn stuff. But yeah, I came from a handy background, and my mom is also extremely handy. When I was a kid, we'd go to flea markets and she would pick up a Haywood Wakefield dining room table and chairs and reupholster all the chairs and finish the table and like bring it back to its former glory. So I come from handy people.
I am so jealous. I can't tell you. So Kiki, I think we'll take a quick break here, but when we return, I'd love for you to read one of your stories, okay?
Okay, great.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with today's guest, writer Kiki Reginato. We'll be right back.
Last week on Wait, Wait, Hari Kondabolu told us why he loves the 2024 Chicago White Sox, the worst team in modern baseball history.
I love the fact they make regular people feel like they too could play Major League Baseball.
Yeah. I'm Peter Sagal. We won't just cover the presidential debate. We might ask comedian and impressionist Jay Farrow to just reenact it for us. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, Angela Page from Folk Plus. On the Folk Plus shows that I create, they are lyrically driven and based on a theme. I choose the songs with music that moves my heart and lyrics that engage our minds. Take an intelligent, intimate journey with today's singer-songwriters and join me on Folk Plus, Sundays at 4.
Last night I saw the Horse King when he was in his prime.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear music to strip by, music for a 50-foot woman, and Buddy Collette's Swingin' Shepherds. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me this week at the Underground Martini Bunker for the Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just joined us, I've been speaking with writer Kiki Reginato from Tyler Hill, Pennsylvania. In the first half of the show, Kiki spoke about growing up in New York City, living in the two very different households of her divorced parents, in Soho with her dad and in Harlem with her mom. While growing up, Kiki also spent lots of time up here in Narrowsburg with her best friend, Radio Catskill's very own Calliston Stratton, producer and host of Liberation Station. Let me just say it's on Saturday nights at 7. Kiki told us about meeting both presidential candidate Barack Obama and then Vice President hopeful Joe Biden, which occurred when she worked on the Obama campaign as a field officer in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to start off the second half of the show with Kiki reading one of her stories. So let's get to it. Okay, Kiki, does this story have a title, a name?
This is actually the introduction to a book I'm working on.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go.
Great. All right. One day over a lunch of overpriced salads at a tasteful Alice Waters-esque farm-to-table restaurant, I told my mother the concept for this book and subsequently the title, Book of Nemeses. She gave me a bemused chuckle, not a big enough laugh to stop chewing her radicchio, but her first thought was, darling, you can't possibly have enough to fill a whole book. While I anticipate this book to be a slim volume, at the time I'm writing this, I have not actually surpassed 20,000 words, but a lack of material on the topic in question is no way my problem. Mom, I can think of at least 20 people that I truly detest and loathe without even having to try that hard. There was a look of mild concern across her face, but it could have been the extra pickle juice that she requested in her Virgin Bloody Mary. Well, why don't you make the first half about your nemeses and the second half about people you admire? Again, she was missing the point. But my mother is what I like to call a Barnes & Noble Buddhist, by which I mean she's gone to the Buddhism table at Barnes & Noble, purchased a book where it will then sit on her nightstand, mostly read, for 20 years. So she believes in forgiveness, letting things go, and taking the higher path. Unfortunately, I do not. And I think I've traced this tendency towards compiling a dossier of foes back to the source, my father. My father is a man who's most often been described as a real son of a bitch. It should surprise no one that my mother and father have been happily divorced for over 20 years. Let me set the scene for you. My dad is an artist who moved to Soho in the 60s and therefore came into contact with numerous people that it would be considered very cool to know. Attempt to prompt my dad to tell one of these stories, though, and instead you will get, Donald Judd, enough with the plywood already. Also, I lent him $50 in 1975 and he never paid me back. And then you'll get into the intricacies of why he owes him $50 and so on. Additionally, if he has not written someone off for wronging him in some way, he will have a gripe with that person for stealing his idea and or not giving him credit. For example, my husband and I went to Dia Beacon and we were talking to my dad about who we saw. Michael Heiser, my dad's former roommate, was one of those people. And my dad then said, you know, I was the one who gave him the idea to dig the holes. I was like, hey, Mike, you keep going up. Why don't you go down? As if to imply that he really isn't getting any of the credit for the idea that he so rightfully deserves. I find this trait extremely amusing, since I have no real interest in talking about art, but a deep and unending interest in gossip and petty squabbles. Now, my father's various feuds never bothered me. That is, until I started a job at New York Magazine. I was a relatively new employee at New York Magazine. Confusingly, considering you are currently reading a piece of writing that I've written, I was not there in any sort of writing capacity. No, I was there to be the director of strategy and operations for e-commerce, which is just a fancy way of saying that I did math, money, and computers. One of the magical things about working at New York Magazine is all the cool people that come through the office. I saw a teeny tiny Ariana Grande washing her hands in our fluorescent linoleum bathroom. I would occasionally chat with probably the best profile writer in the history of profile writers, Allison P. Davis, in the kitchen about if there was any milk left. These were the very cool things about New York Magazine. But no one was more magical than Jerry Saltz. Jerry is simultaneously New York Magazine's fanciest and least fancy employee. He is the fanciest because he won a Pulitzer Prize for art criticism. He is the least fancy because you will sometimes see him walking around with a 7-Eleven big gulp of iced coffee that he's emptied roughly 11 sugar packets into. I get the sense that if Jerry Saltz was in a kindergarten classroom and a child presented him with a drawing, he would actually sit in wonderment at the creativity. He would praise the child for being a genius, and he would find elements of Picasso. And on top of that, he would actually believe it. Jerry is like a lab or a golden retriever, extremely food motivated. And since brands would frequently send us snacks and gifts, we always had some sort of snack on our team's snack table. So at roughly 4 p.m. every day, Jerry would come over to our area foraging for food. Jerry would pop by and say something like, got anything good today? And on this day in particular, we had some fancy gummy bear company send us a bunch of champagne-flavored gummy bears that were supposed to be used as party favors for bachelorette parties. So we pointed Jerry towards them and he was thrilled. As he was pulling the ribbons off of the delicately packaged gummy bears and was about to go to town on what retailed for about $20 worth of gummy bears, he saw my nameplate on my desk. He popped one of the gummy bears in his mouth and he said, "You wouldn't happen to be related to Peter Reginato, would you?" "That's my father," I said proudly, thinking that Jerry knew my dad's work. I could tell my colleagues were kind of impressed that my dad and Jerry knew each other. But things quickly took a turn for the worse as the color and excitement from his sugar high left his face. And then he said, "You know, he has a lot of strong opinions. He really has a set of beliefs from his time and he sticks to it. He talks about it a lot on Facebook." The conversation quickly became stilted and awkward. I didn't think too much about it until later when I decided to look up the interactions that Jerry and my dad were having on Facebook. Their interactions seemed to hinge on the philosophical difference of who should be an artist, with Jerry believing that everyone is creative and my dad, of course, believing that everyone is a hack. It was then that I realized that my dad was cyberbullying Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic Jerry Saltz. At my molten core, I am my father's daughter. I am unfortunately cut from this cloth. I wish that I could forgive. I wish that I could be more Barnes & Noble Buddhist-like. But unfortunately, I have a Taylor Swift-like ability to hold on to a grudge. When I attempt to read one of these books about forgiveness, my initial reaction is, "You gotta be kidding me." And to some extent, I think that holding on to a grudge is somewhat healthy. Not the way my father is doing it, but if you feel bad about the interactions from your past, you learn something. You know how you want to be treated by people, and you also learn that that person is an asshole.
I love that, Kiki. So you're going to do a book of Nemesis, mm-hmm. and each chapter is going to be a different person with whom you hold a grudge?
Yes, that is the thought.
Well, I am going to look forward to reading that book, and I wish you much luck and much joy with it. You know, I think that everyone in their heart of hearts has these little feelings, should I say, about people, but no one that I know is quite as brave as you to actually put it down on paper, and then you're going to get it published. So fantastic.
Yeah, when I get sued for libel, that's really when I won't be so thrilled about the whole idea.
Okay. Well, let's hope that's not going to happen. But I just want to thank you so much for coming on with me today. I really appreciated our conversation. And I look forward to seeing you at the next Yarn Slingers.
Thanks so much, Donna. It was great to be on.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Kiki Reginato. Watch for Yarn Slingers announcements to find out when Kiki is performing. Catskill Character is on every Saturday except the last Saturday of the month when I share the 10:30 time slot with Greg Triggs, who brings us Travels with Triggs. Please tune in then for more fascinating stories of characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. Thank you so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Music from a musician's perspective. I'm Kathy Geary, and on Now and Then, we explore the artistry of the singer-songwriter. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The The political press are complaining about a lack of access to Kamala Harris.
Reporters understandably and incorrectly believe that the most important thing a candidate can do is answer their questions.
The question is, when she does talk to them, what will they do with it?
Would you want to talk to you? Because I don't think I would.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill, WJFF Jeffersonville. Listen local.